Good afternoon. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. At present, it is overcast here in Kodiak, 42 degrees Fahrenheit for today. Rain mainly after 4 p.m., a high near 43, an east wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. For tonight, rain. The rain could be heavy at times, a low around 40, east wind around 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 100%. New precipitation amounts between 3/4 and 1 inch possible. Saturday, rain with a high near 47, a northeast wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. Saturday night, scattered showers, mainly before 10 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 41. North wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming west after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 30%. Sunday, a chance of rain before 1 p.m., then showers likely after 1 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 47, a south wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Sunday night, showers mainly before 10 p.m., then rain after 10 p.m. A low around 41. A southeast wind around 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Secretary of the Treasury says she expects the nation's economic recovery to remain on track, but warns it may be bumpy from month to month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports Janet Yellen appeared at a White House briefing today to address the sharp decline in job growth laid out in the Labor Department's big employment report for the month of April.
U.S. employers added just 266,000 jobs in April, far fewer than most forecasters had expected. Yellen told reporters she expects job gains will continue in the months to come as more people get vaccinated and more schools and businesses return to normal operation.
We knew this would not be a 100-day battle. And today's jobs report underscores the long-haul climb back to recovery.
Bars and restaurants added 187,000 jobs last month, but grocery stores and delivery services cut workers. Factory jobs also declined, largely because of supply bottlenecks that have forced automakers to temporarily idle workers. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The former police officers involved in George Floyd's arrest and murder in Minneapolis nearly a year ago are now facing federal civil rights charges. Court documents unsealed today reveal a federal grand jury indicted Tutau J. Alexander King, Thomas Lane, and Derek Chauvin, who's already in prison and awaiting sentencing after he was convicted a few weeks ago on state murder charges. Chauvin's also been indicted for allegedly using an unnecessary neck restraint on a 14-year-old boy in 2017. His co-defendants are due to stand trial on their state charges this summer. A judge in North Carolina is giving authorities more time to allow the family of Andrew Brown Jr. to view body cam footage from his fatal shooting by sheriff's deputies last month and limiting what they can see. NPR's Sarah McCammon reports a family so far has been allowed to see one 20-second piece of the footage.
The family of Andrew Brown Jr. and their lawyers say Pasquotank County Sheriff's deputies shot him from behind while his hands were on the steering wheel of his car. Superior Court Judge Jeffrey Foster previously ordered that the public release of the footage should be delayed while an investigation is underway, but that the family should be allowed to view more of the footage within 10 days. Now, Foster is giving authorities an additional 10 days. In a new ruling, Foster says the disclosure to the family should be limited to about 20 minutes out of 2 hours of footage, based on what he says is appropriate under state law. Sarah McCammon, NPR News.
India's broken another daily record in COVID-19 cases. The UNICEF representative in India, Yasmin Haq, says with the virus spreading so quickly there, other countries in the region should also be worried. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has closed up 228 points, more than 0.5%, ending at 34,777. It's NPR.
When Fred and Mary Barber got a phone call from Stash Strong, a 501c3 charity for brain cancer research, they wasted no time in lending their support. The Stash Strong charity has a unique fundraiser that they host every May. They ask breweries around the country to create their own unique take on a particular beer. And the Barbers are owners and brewers for the Olds River Inn restaurant and brewery. Fred took it upon himself to make his own version of the beer.
They want an IPA, and they wanted a single malt, single hop. And so we basically tried to come up with a recipe that would work. And so I have basically my little computer program. We kind of put together something that seemed like it would taste good, and we brewed it, and we tried it, and we thought it was delicious.
This beer is presently available at the Olds River Inn, and 100% of its sales go to the Stash Strong charity. The barbers said that they didn't need much convincing to join on, but as they learned more about the cause, the importance of their work took on new gravity.
Sure, we realized that how many people we knew that actually had run into this, you know, brain cancer issue, which is kind of frightening, you know, it hits people really fast, you know, and it seems like it takes a lot of people's lives.
They say that the sales were good on the first weekend and that they expect the trend to continue.
We'll have a little running tally on a board, I think, maybe to kind of see how much we've raised, you know, and so I think the first weekend after that, we might have raised $500 or something, roughly, so, which, you know.
2 days.
In 2 days, yeah, well, for 2 days of service, so that was nice.
The beer will be available throughout the month of May, and all proceeds go towards brain cancer research. An invasive fungus is threatening Alaska's frogs, toads, newts, and salamanders. Claire Strempel reports for Alaska's Energy Desk.
The fungus's full Latin name,
Batrachochytrium dendrobatidis, or botitis,
is such a mouthful that scientists call it BD, or chytrid. That was Reese Brand Phillips, who works for the National Forest Service and leads the Threatened and Endangered Species Program in the state. He says it's a threat to all six of Alaska's amphibian species. So he's calling for a multi-agency working group to get ahead of the fungus before it's too late.
We know that it has had devastating impacts elsewhere, so we want to get a handle on this before we see impacts in Alaska.
It's not always lethal, but the fungus has decimated frog populations around the world and is thought to be responsible for up to 90 extinctions. Phillips says researchers aren't sure how it got to Alaska, but it has been observed here since the year 2000. Researchers have traced chytrid from the Kenai Peninsula to Prince of Wales Island. It's not everywhere. There's no evidence of the fungus on Douglas or Admiralty Islands near Juneau, but it's turned up in Yakutat, Cordova, Haines, and Skagway. And while scientists know the fungus is widespread, they don't yet have a sense of its impact on the frog populations in the state. Part of the reason for that is they don't know how many amphibians there are.
There's some anecdotal evidence that frogs used to be more abundant than they are now, but we can't definitively say that BD did that. And so that's one of the challenges that we have right now, is trying to gather that baseline data to really try to ascertain where we're at.
Phillips says the fungus thrives in warm temperatures, about 60 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit. That means climate change could increase its prevalence in the state.
If things warm in Alaska like we anticipate, what that's going to probably do is it's going to expand the areas northward where BD can survive. And so we can anticipate that we might have BD in areas where we don't have it now.
That could be hard on amphibians. Humans don't get BD, and predators don't either. It only affects freshwater zones. Phillips says fieldwork in Alaska this summer will give the agency a better sense of where the virus is and point to how it might be contained. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Claire Strempel.
The Biden administration issued a conservation report Thursday called America the Beautiful. The centerpiece is a goal of conserving 30% of the nation's lands and waters by 2030, in part to combat climate change. Republicans in Congress immediately criticized it as an attempt to lock up natural resources, but conservation groups are eyeing parts of Alaska they'd like to see protected.
It's hard to think of two better candidates than Batangas in southeast Alaska and Bristol Bay in southwest Alaska.
Tim Bristol is the executive director of Salmon State. He says conservation measures in the Tongass and Bristol Bay would protect fish and wildlife and also save thousands of jobs that depend on renewable resources.
It just seems like they're no-brainers. They're places where you could make the 30 by 30 concept real and also have a real positive impact on many people's lives.
Bristol's group is among those campaigning to have the roadless rule reinstated for the Tongass. They also want the EPA to reapply Clean Water Act protection to the Bristol Bay watershed to preclude a new permit application for the proposed Pebble Mine. The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association and other groups that advocate for small boat fishermen are also joining the call to protect Bristol Bay and the Tongass. Kelly Harrell is chief fisheries officer at Sitka Salmon Shares, a processor that buys from small boat fishermen. She says Biden's goal caused some apprehension at first.
Initially, we and many other Alaskans and fishermen, were concerned that the 30 by 30 effort could mean no-take marine areas and marine reserves that would exclude small boat fishermen.
But she says the report released today shows the administration sees fishermen as stewards of the resource. Harrell wants to see the administration succeed in reducing carbon emissions. She says climate change is a threat to healthy fisheries.
Ocean acidification, we know, is having impacts on things like the, our food web in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea. It's a huge concern, and we need action.
Alaska's congressional delegation opposed the roadless rule and the EPA's so-called preemptive veto when they were imposed during prior Democratic administrations. Denali National Park visitation is on track to significantly rebound this summer despite another season of pandemic-reduced capacity. Denali Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center Executive Director Vanessa Juzak says demand is already outpacing openings.
There's already dates in both June and July that, properties are fully booked, campgrounds are fully booked, park buses are fully booked.
Juzak describes bookings as happening at insane rates.
We've had a huge increase in people contact us through the visitor center trying to either get a tour into Denali Park on the bus or one of the transit buses, to get on and off and hike and explore on their own, who can't find an open seat.
Juzak says concern has been addressed to the National Park Service, but Park Director of Interpretation and Education Paul Olig says the agency and its bus concessionaire are hampered by pandemic restrictions on everything from employee housing to the number of people permitted on park tours and transit buses.
We are limiting capacity to 50% on all buses in order to allow for social distancing to take place on those buses.
In anticipation of increased visitor demand this summer, the park offered reservation of daily permits to drive a 15-mile stretch of the park road between Savage River and Tuklanaka, but Oleg says they quickly sold out.
Those permits opened on April 20th, and by the end of April, all of those permits were sold out. So that tells us that there is a very significant amount of interest in people visiting Denali this summer.
With no cruise ships to sail to Alaska again this season, the bump in visitor interest is from independent travelers flying into Fairbanks or Anchorage, but the visitor center Juzak cautions that getting the rest of the way to Denali may prove difficult.
Denali has some challenges for independent travelers, mainly our lack of public transportation, and rental cars are really hard to get, and RVs are getting more and more hard to get.
About half of the Alaskans who responded to an online survey in March from the state health department said they had not gotten a COVID-19 vaccine yet or booked an appointment. And about half of that unvaccinated group said they probably or definitely won't get vaccinated. And about half of that. The health department released those survey results and others Thursday. Epidemiologist Sarah Aho says the department wants to learn more about why some Alaskans haven't gotten a vaccine yet and what questions they might have.
There's so many topics to talk about with COVID vaccines that we really want to make sure we are focusing on what we're hearing from the community.
The survey involved just over 1,200 Alaskans, and it narrowed in on the group who were unvaccinated but who said they were open to learning more about the vaccine. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says about a quarter of them said they had not gotten a COVID-19 vaccine yet because of concerns about safety or side effects.
It's really easy to overestimate the side effects or the risk of something new versus underestimate the risk of something we do all the time, like getting in the car.
Another 25% said they don't think COVID is that serious. But Zink pointed to the huge spike in cases in Fairbanks and countered.
So we have a really powerful tool against this virus, but unfortunately, we are still seeing even very young people get very sick and die. We've had two people in their 20s in the last couple of weeks die from COVID-19.
Less common answers included concerns that the vaccine was rushed or conspiracy theories about it. And according to the survey results, for about three-quarters of the hesitant Alaskans, their most trusted sources of information about COVID-19 were their family and friends. They trusted their employers the least. State health officials say they'll use the survey information to help inform how they communicate about the vaccine. New details are emerging about a COVID-19 outbreak associated with a regional high school sports tournament held in Ketchikan. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, public health officials say at least 23 cases have been linked to April's regional wrestling tournament.
The Bill Weiss Tournament is an annual wrestling event that invites athletes and their families from around the region. Now, public health officials say people in five of the seven communities that participated this year, Craig, Kluwak, Sitka, Wrangell, and Ketchikan, have tested positive for COVID-19 after attending the tournament. It was held alongside another regional tournament on April 23rd and 24th at Ketchikan High School. Craig parent Lonnie Lingley was at the tournament with her son. She acknowledges that sports in a pandemic carry a level of risk, but she says she thought the Ketchikan wrestling tournament would be safe.
Because of the paperwork sent home and the lengths went into making sure all our kids were tested and knowing that every community coming to the tournament would be tested and that we would be wearing masks and temperatures would be checked.
She spoke to KRBD from Alicia Roberts Medical Center in the Prince of Wales Island community of Kluwak, where she was being tested for COVID-19. Ketchikan emergency officials said Tuesday that five people at the tournament at Ketchikan High School were infected and contagious during the indoor event. The regional governing body for school sports issued a formal warning to Ketchikan High School last week, saying school officials did not test their athletes prior to the competition and did not enforce a mask requirement. Ketchikan's school district says it's investigating. Lingley was unaware at the time that Ketchikan wrestlers had not been tested, but she says she noticed some other irregularities.
I was quite shocked that people were walking around, they weren't wearing their masks, they weren't social distanced. The only people I noticed were the people from out of town.
She says that while there was a table set up to check temperatures and screen for symptoms, no one was at that table to perform checks and screenings when she arrived. Now, fallout from the event is starting to emerge after Ketchikan's school board was briefed on the situation. State Public Health Nurse Arizona Jacobs told the board Wednesday that 13 Ketchikan High School employees and students have now tested positive.
All but one was infectious and present in school for 1 to 6 days before beginning quarantine.
Three of the 13 cases were present at school and infectious for at least a full week, Ketchikan emergency officials say, and roughly 8% of the student body is currently in quarantine. It's not clear how many people were potentially exposed as a result of the tournament. Jacobs told the board that contact tracing for cases that have arisen outside of school is still underway.
Just because of the case count and the number of contacts that these cases have had, which is substantially more than has been in the past, it's going to take some time before we can get around to all of them.
She said the outbreak had overwhelmed local contact tracers requiring help from the state. Jacobs said some close contacts may not be notified if they were exposed more than 10 days ago because their quarantine period would have already ended. Some senior state health department officials were on hand for Wednesday's virtual school board meeting, including State Public Health's Coleman Kutchins. He told the board that one option for containing the outbreak was mass COVID-19 testing for students and staff.
Well, use of universal masking helps keep schools open. And then when you're having cases spread, robust universal screening testing. Those are the people that are asymptomatic. And then pulling out your positives also really helps, you know, keep people in school and keep communities open.
As of Wednesday afternoon, it's not clear whether Ketchikan's school district will go forward with mass testing. Craig parent Lingley says she's looking for reassurances that the district will do better in the future.
I'm all about the kids being in sports. I want the sports to continue. I just don't want it to be negligent.
Ketchikan High School closed the Wednesday after the tournament but reopened the following Monday. The school closed again the next day and will remain shut through at least Friday with students studying remotely. All after-school activities are canceled through at least Monday. So far, impacts to other Ketchikan area schools have been limited. Ketchikan's middle school, alternative high school, and elementary schools look set to stay fully open for now. Ketchikan's school board left that decision up to the acting superintendent, who told KRBD Wednesday afternoon that she's working with school administrators to chart a path forward. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. A big push for Congress to okay a National Seafood Council. More after this.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at wildalaskaseafood.com.
A who's who of more than 60 U.S. fishing companies, organizations, medical professionals, and more sent a letter to Congress this week to support a countrywide seafood marketing and public education campaign. They want to resurrect a National Seafood Council. The core mission is simple: get Americans to eat more U.S. seafood.
Maybe we should have a contest to find a nice tagline that would identify seafood in the same way as got milk or the beef, it's what's for dinner.
Getting that word out is one of the biggest challenges, says Dr. Tom Brenna, professor of pediatrics and nutrition at the University of Texas. A promotional blitz is part of the plan to highlight the immense health benefits of eating fish and shellfish, a message backed by Americans who have sent seafood sales soaring during the COVID pandemic. Eating seafood also tops the list in new U.S. dietary recommendations that Americans eat 2 seafood servings each week, starting with kids at 6 months. A National Seafood Council was created in 1987 as part of a Fish and Seafood Promotion Act, but fizzled after 5 years and ran out of money. This week's industry letter to Congress requests $25 million in seed money to revive a more modernized council that would eventually become industry-funded. A task force led by the Seafood Nutrition Partnership has formed to lay a foundation for the council. Dr. Tom Brenna said he's encouraged by the seafood push.
Apparently, we have not done the kind of job that we should have in educating consumers in what they ought to be demanding. I think we have a major effect here that ought to be heralded from the rooftops.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM's Island Messenger. Light rain at present here in Kodiak, 42 degrees Fahrenheit right now for this afternoon rain, mainly after 5 p.m., a high near 43, east wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. For tonight, rain. The rain could be heavy at times, a low around 40 and east wind around 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 100%. New precipitation amounts between 3/4 and 1 inch possible. For Saturday, rain with a high near 47, an east wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. And new precipitation amounts between a half and 3/4 of an inch possible. For Saturday night, scattered showers, mainly before 11 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 41, a north wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming west after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 30%. For Sunday, a chance of rain before 2 p.m., then showers likely after 2 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 47, a south wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Sunday night showers, mainly before 11 p.m., then rain after 11 p.m. Low around 41, a southeast wind around 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 80%. For Monday, rain with a high near 46, chance of precipitation at 90%, and for Monday night, rain, cloudy, with a low around 41. It is the 7th of May, 2021, a Friday. The sun rose today at 6:03 a.m. It will set tonight at 10:11 p.m., and it will rise again tomorrow at 6:01 a.m. For daylight, that's 16 hours and 8 minutes, with a gain of 4 minutes and 27 seconds. The record high was 60 degrees in 1918, and the record low was 22 degrees in 1972. For Kodiak District tides, a low tide occurred at 6:25 a.m. of 1.60 feet, a high tide at 12:21 p.m. of 6.70 feet, a low tide at 6:26 p.m. of 0.88 feet, a high tide at 12:50 a.m. of 7.8 feet, and a low tide at 7:08 a.m. of 0.82 feet. For west side tides, a low tide at 6:58 a.m. of 2.07 feet, a high tide at 12:56 p.m. of 12.17 feet, a low tide at 7:07 p.m. of 1.58 feet, a high tide at 1:17 a.m. of 13.79 feet, and a low tide at 7:38 a.m. of 0.85 feet. Going into the marine weather, for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, a small craft advisory through Saturday. Today, an east wind of 30 knots, seas to 9 feet with rain. Tonight, east wind of 30 knots, seas to 11 feet with rain. Saturday, a southwest wind of 20 knots, except east 25 knots north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 9 feet. Saturday night, a southwest wind of 20 knots, seas to 9 feet. And for Sunday, a southeast wind of 20 knots, seas to 8 feet. For the Shelikof Strait, a gale warning tonight. Today, east wind of 20 knots, increasing to 30 knots in the afternoon. Seas to 4 feet, building to 9 feet in the afternoon. Tonight, a northeast wind of 35 knots, seas to 11 feet, with rain. For Saturday, a northeast wind of 30 knots, becoming east 20 knots in the afternoon, seas to 8 feet, with rain. And for Saturday night, a variable wind of 10 knots, seas to 3 feet. A synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front enters the southwestern Gulf Friday morning and enters the northern Gulf Saturday morning. On to some community announcements. There will be a spring community fundraiser to benefit KMXT, a plant sale, Saturday, May 8th, that's tomorrow, at 12 noon at 1223 West Kauskov Street. Veggie, flower, and herb seedlings, perennials, rhubarb, shrubs, indoor plants, and more. For more info and to donate plants, call 907-539-5009. A notice of Kodiak Island Borough meetings for May the 10th through May 21st. There will be a meeting on Wednesday, May the 12th at 1:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. The Local Emergency Planning and Zoning, or the Local Emergency Planning Committee quarterly meeting. For the same day, Wednesday the 12th at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers, there will be a Planning and Zoning Commission work session. For Thursday, May 13th at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall, there will be a Borough Assembly work session. The Consolidation Committee will be meeting Monday, May 17th at 6:30 p.m. in the conference room. The Solid Waste Advisory Board meeting will be Tuesday, May 18th at 5:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. The Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting will be Wednesday, May 19th at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. And there will be a Borough Assembly regular meeting on Thursday, May the 20th at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. Celebrate World Migratory Bird Day on Saturday, May 8th of 2021, that is tomorrow. The Kodiak Audubon and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge will host Dave Dorsey and his snowy owl Ghost virtually on Saturday, May the 8th at noon. Ghost will be present for the first 15 minutes of the Zoom session, so don't be late. Dave will be happy to answer questions after the short presentation. Registration is required. Please visit kodiakaudubon.blogspot.com or our Facebook page for the link to register. This event is organized and sponsored by Kodiak Audubon Society and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. For more information, contact Cindy Trussell at 486-2878. The Kodiak Island Borough School District Board of Education is seeking citizens interested in serving on the KIBSD Board of Education through October of 2021. Letters of interest must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 19th of 2021. Interviews for the appointment will take place at May 24th, 2021. Special work session and appointment at a May 24th, 2021 special meeting. Citizens interested in serving on the school board should submit a letter of interest to Bianca Clark, the school board secretary at the Kodiak Island Borough School District at 722 Mill Bay Road, Kodiak, Alaska, here in town. Bianca.Clark@KIBSD.org is the contact email. And lastly, celebrate Mother's Day with the library by making beautiful tissue paper flowers. As instructional video is posted on the library's website, you can call 486-8686 to reserve your materials before May 8th. On May 11th at 11 a.m., the Kodiak Public Library is bringing back the Community Beekeeping Project with the first hive check of the summer. Call the library to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper or watch from inside. For more information, contact Annie at 486-8683. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Patrons are welcomed for a two-hour visit once per day. Appointments are not necessary and masks are required.
Arctic Care 2021 is coming to Kodiak May 5th through May 13th. Arctic Care 2021 is a no-cost healthcare services program provided by the U.S. Department of Defense in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association. Arctic Care offers no-cost dental, medical, and optometry services to anyone in the Kodiak community. To learn more, including how to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 486-9870.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.